from his personal body. Prakriti sparshan. The Lord glances over the material nature. Jiva Rupa. Having this form of the spark-like living entities. Who are parts and parcels. Bij. Semen. Tate. In that material nature. Kaila Samarpan. Impregnated. Translation and purport. By His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta, Swami Shri Prabhupada. Translation. To impregnate with the seeds of the living entities, the Lord Himself does not directly touch the material energy, but by His specific functional expansion, He touches the material energy, and thus the living entities, who are His parts and parcels, are impregnated into material nature. Take this, Haribol. Haribol. Parthal. You can, okay, you can read from there. You can use this. Very thoughtful. Let them, they're trying to pick something out. Who is using
that?
Report by Srila Prabhupada's disciples. According to Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita 15.7, Mamai Vangso Jiva Loke, Jiva Bhuta Sanatanaha, Manasastan Indriyani Prakriti Stani Karshati. The living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. In the present verse of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the word Prakriti Sparshan refers to the Lord's glancing over material nature and placing the living entities in contact with dual matter. The glancing is performed by Mahavishnu, Sa Aikshita Lokan Nusrija Iti, Aitreya Upanishad. In the conditioned stage, we impregnate according to the bodily conception, that is, by sexual intercourse. But the Supreme Lord does not need sexual intercourse to impregnate. The impregnation is performed simply by His glance. This is also explained in the Brahma Samhita
532. Govinda Mari Purusham Tamandajam.
Govinda can impregnate simply by glancing. In other words, his eyes can work as his genitals. He does not need genitals to beget a child. Indeed, Krishna can beget any one of the living entities with any part of his body. The word Swanga Vishesha Bhasha Rupe, indicating the form by which the Lord begets living entities in the material world, is explained herein. He is Lord Shiva. In the Brahma Samhita, it is stated that Lord Shiva, who is another form of Mahavishnu, is like yogurt. Yogurt is nothing but milk, yet it is not milk. Similarly, Lord Shiva is considered the father of the universe, and material nature is considered the mother. The father and mother are known as Lord Shiva and Goddess Durga. Together, Lord Shiva's genitals and the vagina of Goddess Durga are worshipped as the Shiva Linga. This is the origin of the material creation. Thus, Lord Shiva's position is between that of the living entity and that of the Supreme Lord. In other words, Lord Shiva is neither the Supreme Personality of Godhead nor a living entity. He is the form through which the Supreme Lord works to beget living entities within this material world. As yogurt is prepared when milk is mixed with a culture, the form of Lord Shiva expands when the Supreme Personality of Godhead is in touch with material nature. The impregnation of material nature by the Father, Lord Shiva, is wonderful because at one time, innumerable living entities are conceived. Bhago Jiva Savigneya Sachanantaya Kalpate. These living entities are very, very small. Keshagra Shatabhagasya Shatangsha Sajasatmakaha Jiva Shukshma Sarupo Yam Sakyatito Hichit Kanaha. If we divide the tip of a hair into 100 parts, and then take one of these parts and divide it again into 100 parts, that very fine division is the size of but one of the numberless living entities. They are all chitkana, particles of spirit, not matter. The innumerable brahmandas, or universes, come from the pores of the Lord's body, and innumerable living entities also come from the pores of the transcendental body of the Lord. This is the process of material creation. Without the living entities, this material nature has no value. Both emanate from the pores of the transcendental body of Lord Vishnu, Mahavishnu. They are different energies. The material nature is explained as follows by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita 7.4. Bhumir apo nalo vayu kamano bhurhir evacha ahankara tiyame vina prakritir ashtada. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. All together, these eight constitute my separated material energies. Thus, the material elements also come from the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but they are a different type of energy from the living entities. Although the living entities also come from the Lord's body, they are categorized as a superior energy. Apareya mitastvanyam prakritim vidime param. Jiva Bhuta Mahabaho Yaye Dam Daryate Jagat. Besides this inferior nature, O mighty Arjuna, there is another superior energy of mine, which comprises the living entities who are exploiting the resources of this material inferior nature. The inferior energy or matter cannot act without the superior energy. All these things are very clearly explained in the Vedas. The materialistic theory that life develops from matter is incorrect. Life and matter come from the Supreme Living Entity. Therefore, being the source of both, that Supreme Living Entity, Krishna, is described in the Vedic Sutra as Janmadyasya Yataha, or the original source of everything, Sarva Karana Karanam. This is further explained in the following verse.
Thank you. Om Jnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschati Desha Tarini, Vanja Kalipataru Vyascha, Prapasindhu Pyayavacha, Patita Nam Pavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha, Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhara, Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. I'm grateful to be here with all of you, and sorry for all the technical inconvenience over there. We're trying to get this to act like a screen where I can write and draw some things. So we'll see if that works. So here we are discussing Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings to Sanatana Goswami. And we see Srila Prabhupada's expertise here. Many places, many times, Prabhupada combines translation purport because his focus is primarily on giving clarity of understanding. So, in the translation, literally if you look at the verse, what it is saying is that sparashan, that there is swanga vishesha abhas rupe prakriti sparashan, by a special manifestation, of his, okay, thank you. So by a special manifestation of his, he touches prakriti, and then he offers the jivas into prakriti, jiva rupi prakriti tare kaila samarpan. Now Prabhupada goes to great pains, we could say, in the translation as well as the purport, to emphasize that the Lord does not become materially contaminated. And then he says how the Lord is actually only glancing. He is that sparshan. Literally, sparsha means touch. And when we use the word sparsha, that is the normal way when procreation happens. There is physical contact. But the Lord is clearly emphasizing over here, Prabhupada is emphasizing purport, that this sparshan is a visheshabhash, a special manifestation. What is that special manifestation? The Lord's form is angani yasasakalendriya vrittimanti, that each limb of his is like every other limb. And thus by his glance also he can touch. So, I'll talk about this in three broad parts. The first part is, why is this so important? That the Lord does not come in material contact. Adar does not come in material contact with matter. Lord is not contaminated by matter. Why is this point so important? We'll see this repeatedly in Srila Prabhupada's purports. Is that visible or it's too small? We'll write a little bigger. So the second is, what does this imply and not imply? So when we say the Lord does not come in contact with matter, what does it imply? What does it not imply? And lastly, how does it matter to devotees? How does it matter to us as sadhakas when we are practicing bhakti? So let's look at the first point. Why is this considered so important? Srila Prabhupada is giving a timeless message. At the same time, he is giving that message at a particular time. And when he is giving that message at a particular time, he is, so if we consider this to be the timeless tradition, so the timeless message is coming down this tradition, right from Brahmaji down to Mahadacharya, Mahaprabhu, down to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Prabhupada down. It's a timeless message. At the same time, this timeless message is delivered at particular times. And when it is delivered at particular times, there will be particular obstacles or misconceptions present at those times. And Prabhupada will address those misconceptions. Not just Prabhupada, previous acharyas will address those misconceptions. Whatever misconceptions are prominent in people's mind at those times. So, during Srila Prabhupada's times, and to some extent in today's times, there is the misconception of impersonalism. Now, impersonalism says everything is one. However, impersonalism itself is not one, in the sense that there are many brands of impersonalism. And over a period of time, if you see the idea of, sometimes we simplistically say that impersonalism means, say this is God, this is the soul, and liberation means the two will become one. So this is God, this is the soul. And their union is liberation. And it is not just we who say like that, there are many impersonalists also who say like that. He says, I am God. There was one impersonalist teacher who said, now is the time of egalitarianism. So I have not come with the elitist teaching that I am God. I have come with the egalitarian teaching that you are God. That you are God, and I will help you realize that you are God. So now this is actually an oversimplification. If you go to, this is technically called Neo-Mayavad. Traditional Mayavad, they ridicule the idea. They say, we don't know. We don't say you will become God. Because their idea is something even more insidious. See, it's like, there is the all-pervading Brahman. And that is the only reality. Brahma Satya Jagan Nitya. And when this Brahman, when the Brahman combines with Sattva, that is how the idea of Ishvara or God comes up. So Ishvara is the illusion that arises when Brahman comes in contact with Sattva. When Brahman comes in contact with Rajas, then the illusion that rises is Jiva. And when Brahman comes in contact with Tamas, the illusion that arises is Prakriti. So, their idea is that everything apart from Brahman is simply an illusion. And Brahman is the only reality. So when they say their idea of merging is, when they say impersonal liberation, it is not that Jiva and Ishwar become one. This is not their idea of liberation. Their idea of liberation is, you understand that Prakriti is Maya, you understand Jiva is Maya, you understand Ishwar also is Maya. And all that remains is Brahman. So that is their idea of liberation. So that's why such people, Prabhupada sometimes uses the word atheist to describe even impersonalists. Now many impersonalists, they get irritated at the idea of being called atheists. They say, we are not atheists. They call themselves as transtheists. Transtheist means we are transcendental to theism. Theism is a preliminary stage. But you go beyond theism. Now, less intelligent people worship God. And the more intelligent people understand that there is a reality beyond God. And we want to enter into that reality. So for them, Ishwar is also an illusion. But their understanding is, Ishwar is what they call as a useful fiction. What do you mean by useful fiction? That the Jiva who is bound in this world, most Jivas being conditioned, cannot suddenly think of Brahman or attain Brahman. So in the intermediate, let the Jivas worship Ishwar. Because Ishwar is Brahman contaminated by Sattva. And Sattva is higher than Rajas. So what happens is, their idea of elevation is, if this is Brahman, then Ishwar is here. Now the sizes are not proportional to the realities. It's indicative over here. So this is Ishwara, this is Jiva. So the ultimate purpose is to dissolve one's existence. Actually, they said, no, we don't dissolve our existence. They're very, very apt. Not apt, they're very adept or very cunning in that word, jagali. They say, we don't dissolve our existence. We dissolve the illusion of our existence. The illusion of our separate existence. That Prabhupada also quote that example. There's a big pot and there's a small pot. Both contain air. Once the pots are broken, then all that remains is the air. So the big pot is God. The small pot is the soul. And what really exists is only the air. So both the pots need to be broken. Chatakash, patakash. So they say, but directly going here is difficult. So therefore, they say an alternative way is develop a bond. This is where they say practice bhakti. When you practice bhakti, the jiva and Ishwar, when they develop a bond, then what happens is, by this bond, the jiva will become elevated. So this is the ultimate reality, Brahman. And then, but the greater the bond, by this, the jiva will come very close to Ishwar. And once the jiva and the Ishwar are very close to each other, then gradually the person will realize that actually jiva is an illusion and Ishwar is an illusion. And that is when merging will happen. That is when liberation will happen. So this, their idea is, practicing bhakti is nice for the less intelligent people. And they had a slogan called Chaitanya Path, Shankara Math. Follow the path of Chaitanya. Chaitanya's path is nice, sang, chanting, dancing, singing. It's easy path, everybody can follow it. Follow the path. This is, path is path, something similar. English path and Sanskrit path mean the same thing. But this is not math, this is mat. Mat is the destination. So Shankara Mat. So in their conception, the Ishwar is also a temporary illusion. A useful illusion, but a temporary illusion. And therefore, their idea of deities. Their idea of deities is that the deity is also a temporary illusion. And that is why they say that now this Brahman, which is the ultimate reality, there are two kinds of manifestations that come from Brahman, many. But one is the avatar, which comes periodically. But then, he says, the whole point is, you have to become attracted, you have to become elevated. And that's why you can imagine that Brahman in whichever form you want. Because ultimately, all these forms, so you can worship Vishnu, you can worship Shiva, you can worship Ganesh, you can worship Durga, you can worship Surya, you can worship any of the devatas. And the Guru will say, you can worship me also. Because I am also enlightened Brahman. And their idea is, you worship any form. And this idea is that the soul is over here, and the soul can choose whichever form the soul wants to worship. There's like this spectrum. And whichever form the soul wants to worship, but ultimately all forms are to be transcended. So the form that you are worshipping is just a useful fiction. And this, especially within the Indian political context, seemed very appealing. Because somebody says you have to worship only Krishna or Vishnu. That seems sectarian. But you worship any god that you want. Oh yeah, that's so inclusive. You know, it said we should be open-minded, but not so open-minded that our brains fall out. So now this is not the teaching of scripture. The Bhagavad Gita itself says, sarvasya prabhavo. Krishna uses the word anya devata. And he says, those who worship anya devata are alpamedhasa. They are less intelligent. So this idea, now that we can worship any form and it's all equivalent, that is not the teaching of the Gita. Yes, Krishna himself says that, yes, if those who can't worship me, they can worship some other devatas. But still, the blessings that they are getting from the devatas are coming from me. So the bhakti understanding is somewhat different. Say, Krishna is the highest reality, and there are various devatas at various levels. And the soul is over here. Ideally, it's best if the soul worships Krishna. It's best if the soul worships Krishna. This is the soul. And these are the various devatas. But if the soul cannot worship Krishna, and the soul can worship one of the devatas, But the key point is, it is Krishna who is empowering the devatas. And Krishna, it is not the devatas and Krishna are interchangeable. It's Krishna, mayaiva vihitan hitan. It is I who am giving the power to devatas to fulfill your desires. Fulfill the worshippers of their fulfill the desires of their worshippers. So overall, this has no scriptural basis. But this is the idea. And when we accept that God is coming in contact with matter, that implies that we are tacitly, if not explicitly, accepting the idea that this impersonal idea that Bhagawan or Ishvara is also Brahman contaminated by matter. Prabhupada says, no, this does not happen. So this point, why is it so important? Because from here, just once you accept that Brahman, that Bhagawan becomes contaminated by matter, then it's just only a small step forward that actually Bhagawan is itself a contaminated level of divinity. And the pure level of divinity is Brahman. So Prabhupada is categorical. Bhagawan is not a contaminated level of divinity. Bhagawan is the highest level of divinity. And then, this is the conception which Prabhupada is very strongly addressing. Now, as I started this point about the timeless and the timely. So at particular times, particular conceptions are being, misconceptions are being addressed by the Acharyas. Now, interestingly, the current Indian scenario is the opposite. Not opposite, it's significantly different. And in India, some of you may be aware that there is a lot of aggressive Christian conversion happening. Around the Tirupati temple itself, there are like a dozen Christian churches that have come up. They're trying to build churches on the Tirupati hill itself. So statistics vary, but a large number of Hindus in the northeast of India, there people cannot even do chanting of the holy names openly because it's all majority Christian, aggressive Christian. So the Christians in India are quite far because they're recent converts, so they are far more intolerant. And peculiarly, they use this exact point that your God does not come in contact with matter as a point for beating Hindus. They say our God, Jesus, is so compassionate that he comes into the world and he experiences the pain that human beings are experiencing. So our God is concerned with empathy with humanity. Your God is only concerned with preserving his purity. He has no empathy. Because his only concern, I'm not contaminated. Jesus doesn't care. Jesus doesn't care to get contaminated. He's protected. He's himself God. He has faith in his divinity. He can come to this world and he undergoes the pain. So they say that actually when Jesus was crucified, when the nails were put in his body, he felt actual pain. And that's how he was commiserating with humanity. Whereas your God comes, just has his fun, doesn't care for people who are suffering. Well, that is not the right understanding at all. If Krishna didn't care for humanity, why would he even come to this world? Then if his only purpose was to have fun, he could have fun in the spiritual world with associates. Isn't it? That's a far more enjoyable place than this. Like somebody wants to have a party, they don't go to a hospital's ICU ward where people are dying and have a party over there. You know, they have a party in a hotel. So the spiritual world is like the hotel. The material world is like a ICU ward of hospital. People are dying, there is so much distress. So if Krishna didn't care, he would not have come to this world at all. But sometimes we may take the same point. Like Prabhupada often is quite insistent. The Bhagavad Gita is not literal, is not to be taken metaphorically. Kurukshetra is a real place. And a battle actually happened. And now there are some aggressive left-wing leftists in India who take this, who take Prabhupada's Gita to say that actually Hinduism is a religion of violence. And they say, yeah, just as the Quran is a book of violence, Hinduism is also a book of violence. But Quran, Muslims get a bad name, Hindus never get a bad name. And this is what a Hindu leader himself is saying. And the Bhagavad Gita is not to be taken metaphorically. It's a literal war. Now, Prabhupada's focus, Prabhupada is responding to a particular idea. At Prabhupada's times, Mahatma Gandhi was using the Bhagavad Gita to support his ideology of non-violence. And for that, he was saying in the Bhagavad Gita that the whole Gita study is metaphorical. But Prabhupada himself did not call for war. That Prabhupada is not telling Indians that all or his followers, all of you have to fight physical wars. Nor did any of the commentators that Prabhupada is quoting, with Vishwanathaswamy Thakur or Baldev Vidyabhushan, they say the essential message of the Gita is rise and fight a war. Nobody is saying that. So while we are sharing our tradition's message, it's important to understand what is the prevailing brand of Maya contaminating people's minds today. Sometimes we might be fighting yesterday's battle today. We are fighting against a brand of Maya that is not present today. I'm not saying it may not be present, it may not be that prominent today. And sometimes our own words may be used against us, against our purpose. That's why in scripture, what is timeless, what is timely, that needs to be understood. Now, so I was talking about the second point. Does it imply that Krishna does not have empathy, that Krishna does not care? No, the Gita says, Suhrudam Sarva Bhutanam. He's the well-wisher of all living beings. Not only is Krishna Suhruda, but those who are devotees of Krishna. This is 529 in the Gita. And 1213, Krishna says, Adveshta Sarva Bhutanam Maitraha Karuna Evacha. Even his devotees, Krishna devotees, become compassionate to all living beings. And compassion is a defining characteristic of a sadhaka, of a great soul, not a sadhaka, of a sadhaka who is moving towards perfection. Krishna talks about many places. If you specifically want to look at empathy, Krishna talks about 632 in the Bhagavad Gita. The summit of the yoga path is Atmaupamyena Sarvatra Samam Pashyati Arjuna. Sukham va yadi va dukham sa yogi paramo mata. The topmost yogi sees the similarity of all living beings by comparison with oneself. Similarity in pleasure, similarity in pain. Similarity in ignorance, similarity in enlightenment. And accordingly, the yogis try to elevate everyone. So empathy is also an important virtue that is talked about in the tradition. But the key point is that Krishna's divinity does not preclude his empathy. So, in the Bhagavad Gita, the focus is very different. See, there are two broad conceptions. This is the spiritual world. This is the material world. And there is the concept of the descent of the divine. So, whether it is God sending his only son, whom his followers started considering to be God, Jesus said, I'm not the Father, I've been sent by the Father. But many Christians worship Jesus as if he were the Father. But there is a descent. So whether it is the descent of the Lord coming to the material world, Jesus, God sending his son or whatever. The purpose of the descent, this is the divine descent that happens from the spiritual level to the material level. Its purpose is to inspire the human ascent. The ascent of human consciousness from the material level to the spiritual level. Now, how is this going to be? How is this going to happen? This happened that, is it likely to happen more by the divine descending to this world and saying that, oh, I'm also suffering like you? How do we know, suppose, if there's a doctor Doctor wants to treat the patients, and doctor comes to a pandemic area. Does the doctor need to get the sickness that the patients have to tell the patient that I also care for you? I know what suffering you're going through. Not necessarily. Rather, the doctor needs to demonstrate health. And the doctor can take, okay, this area is contaminated, let's get out of here. We'll take you to a hospital where things are hygienic, things are clean. We'll treat you and we'll cure you. And the doctor maybe comes and doctor depicts photos, pictures, movies of how people are healthy and happy. Oh, really? This is what I want to become like. So when the purpose of human ascent, how is it served better? When Krishna comes to this world and he displays the uncontaminated exchanges of love that happen in the spiritual world. This is Krishna Leela. Shravan Smaranarhani Karishan Iti Kechana. When Krishna depicts that, that is what attracts the heart much more. So Krishna's compassion is shown not so much by his undergoing the sufferings we are undergoing, but it is by his showing that there is a real level of reality which is beyond suffering, and there is access to that level of reality. So that is the way the Lord shows his compassion. Sometimes compassion is equated with empathy. But compassion is not the same as empathy. Empathy is one aspect of compassion. Empathy means I can feel the pain that you are feeling. But the point of compassion is not just to feel the pain that you are feeling, it is to help you come out of the pain. Isn't it? A key part of compassion, if you have to compare, so this equality is not compassion. Like some people, I used to wonder, if some people they are going through a lot of distress and they're complaining a lot. Now, if one complainer meets another complainer, do they have empathy for each other? Not really. The two complainers come together, and their complaints just become amplified. They together complain about the whole world. That empathy, it's like people have pity and then they have a pity party. And who is it helping? This empathy alone is not sufficient. In compassion, we could say empathy is important. But actually, if you say this is important, there's something far more important. And we could say that is therapy. Now, therapy has a technical term, but what we are saying is a cure, a transformation, a solution. When somebody is suffering, if somebody is starving, oh, you know, I have not eaten for 3 days. Okay, somebody says, I have also not eaten for 3 days. I have food, but I'm starving for 3 days just to empathize with you. Fool, give me some food. You don't have to starve. So, the idea is, in empathy, far more important is cure. So, it is not that Krishna does not care. Krishna cares very much. And the way he cares is by showing us the way out of this world. And that is what Srila Prabhupada was untiringly compassionate. He traveled across the world in advanced age. The only purpose was to elevate people, to give people information about the spiritual world, and then to give people pathway to transform, for transformation, for elevating their consciousness. Prabhupada writes in the introduction to Krishna, introduction to Bhagavad Gita, that our purpose in writing the Bhagavad Gita is the same as the purpose of Krishna in descending to this world 5,000 years ago. That is, to elevate human consciousness. So for us as devotees, sometimes we may think that, okay, Krishna exists in the spiritual world, Krishna is far away. Does he even care for me? Does he even know what I'm going through? Actually, Krishna knows. Krishna doesn't have to experience what we are experiencing to be concerned for us. Krishna cares for each one of us. Toward the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita, I conclude with this point now. If Krishna is here, then sometimes we think Krishna has his, say, gopis in the spiritual world, all the other Vrajavasis, And he's having loving pastimes with them. And we are some lost soul over here somewhere. And we have nothing to do with Krishna. Or Krishna has nothing to do with us. It's not like that. Now from Krishna, there are circles of love which keep extending. And these circles of love keep extending till they include every single living being. Yes, the gopis are in a particularly intimate circle of love. Then we can say there are other pure devotees. But then there are sadhakas. Then there are all living beings. Krishna says, Suhrudam Sarvabhutanam. Krishna said to be Bhakta Vatsala, but Krishna in Prahlad Maharaj's praise, he says, you are Krupana Vatsala. You are not just a lover of devotees, you are also the lover of the Krupanas, the fallen people. So everybody is included in Krishna's circle of love. And that's why, as devotees, we can be reassured that Krishna cares for each one of us. And that Krishna is pure, uncontaminated, does not mean that he is disconnected from our suffering. That simply means that he always retains the potency to elevate and liberate us. Prabhupada gives the example that if I am bound and somebody is not bound, then that person can free me from bondage. So Prabhupada's emphasis in always saying that Krishna is uncontaminated is that Krishna is not bound by material nature. And Krishna has the capacity to elevate and liberate each one of us. So if we can remember that we are all included in Krishna's circle of love, and all that we do is we try to move inward from wherever we are to a more and more intimate circle of love. And that happens by our recognizing Krishna's love and reciprocating with that through our practice of bhakti. And Srila Prabhupada, through the global movement of Krishna consciousness, has actually made accessible to each one of us this. He has placed each one of us in a circle of Krishna's love and has given an opportunity to move deeper and deeper into a more and more intimate circles of love. So I'll summarize. I spoke three main points. The first point was, why does Prabhupada emphasize so much that Krishna is not contaminated by material nature, that Krishna does not have contact, sparshan is not physical contact like happens in intercourse, it is just visual insertion? Because of this impersonal idea that Brahman contaminated by matter is Ishvara. That Brahman contaminated by Sattva is Ishvara. Prabhupada wants to categorically refute that idea. Their idea that Brahman contaminated by Rajas is Jiva, Brahman contaminated by Tamas is Prakriti. And the bond between Jiva and Ishvara is just a temporary useful illusion to ultimately merge into Brahman. That conception Prabhupada is refuting. Then we discuss, but what that does not mean. So I talked about how the Acharyas at different times are addressing different timely misconceptions. So then the second point I discuss is, this does not mean that there is no empathy. That what this means is, essentially, Krishna's compassion comes not so much as empathy as therapy. That he doesn't have, so Christians say that God does not know your suffering. He doesn't care. But God does not have to go through our experience, our suffering, to know our suffering. A doctor does not have to suffer every single disease that a patient has suffered to treat the patient. So God can cure and heal every one of us. And his compassion is shown by his being ready to extend his mercy to everyone, to heal everyone. And the last point of talk about is how every one of us is included in Krishna's circles of love. Maybe not in the inner circle, but still in one of the circles we are all there. And we all have the opportunity by Prabhupada's mercy to move into a more and more inner circle of love. So even the love for Krishna that we experience, or the love of Krishna that we experience, it is real. It is not an illusion. There are greater degrees of reality and greater degrees of intimacy, but even what we are experiencing now is real and will take us towards a deeper reality. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Is there any question or comment? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for a nice class. In India, like, there are four martyrs of the Shankaracharyas. And they have the big temples. And they do so much prasad distribution also. So people who don't have this understanding means taking that prasadam is also kind of contamination, isn't it? I mean, they worship the deities so gorgeously, but they're, and please clarify me, because that they are worshipping, so it looks like, you know, when you go to the temple, it's like it's a far out worship, big temple. And if they do prasad and everything, they do it. But ultimately, inside, internally, their goal is, if I'm correct, please.
Yeah, I got a question. So if somebody goes to a temple which the Advaitins, the Mayavadis are building or maintaining, they are doing worship of deities, they are distributing prasad, but they are contaminated because they are thinking this is an illusion. Well, that's an interesting thing, because we don't know what is which individual's consciousness. So actually, I'd like to put it this way, that there, even within the Mayavadi organization, so Mayavadi, if you say Mayavadi following, so there are actually a very small number of people, so these are the Mayavadis. And all these people are under Mayavad influence. Now, how much is that influence? It's difficult to know. Because when people go to a particular place, most people may not even know that this is a Mayavadi temple. They don't even know what is Mayavad. There's some idea that, everything is one and you have to merge into one. But for them, they don't really philosophically think that this means this form is an illusion, I have to go beyond that form. They may be earnestly worshipping that form. So Krishna is not going to victimize some person just because that person innocently went to a particular temple, which seemed like an externally nice temple. Now, of course, there's the other perspective to look at it. If somebody starts getting caught in their teachings, and see what has happened is the Mayavadis also, they are also strategic. Strategic means they also understand that not everybody is enlightened enough to actually practice Mayavad. So those who are practicing bhakti, they don't disturb the minds of those who are practicing bhakti by telling them that bhakti is less intelligent and ultimately you have to merge with Bhagavan. They tell that, but that is not the prominent teaching which they give most of the times. So for many people, they might just go to that temple, they might take prasad, and they may go to some other temple and take prasad. It is only if somebody becomes exclusively committed to that path and then they buys into that ideology, that is when it's a serious problem. Otherwise, it is in India, if you go to an ordinary Indian in Hindu temple, often the altar is like a museum. There are so many deities over there. So now there is the Supreme Lord, there are demigods, there are semi-gods. Say me God, I am God. So S-A-Y-M-E, semi-god. So like that. There are so many like that. Now who is influenced by how much by whom? We don't know. So my understanding is we don't have to worry too much about it. Most of the life members who helped Srila Prabhupada, say for example, build a Juhu temple, at least two of the prominent life members, both of them were initiated and committed followers of Mayavadi gurus. And when Prabhupada went to their house, they had big pictures of those Mayavadi gurus in their house. Now Prabhupada saw they were committed to them. So Prabhupada, as per, I talked about this with Giriraj Maharaj and Radhanath Maharaj both, said that Giriraj Maharaj told me that in whatever interaction they had, Prabhupada practically never talked with them about their guru. Prabhupada said, okay, they are committed to that path, but they are eager to do seva. So engage them in seva. They helped us in building the temple, they helped us getting contacts, clearances, so many things. And Prabhupada is appreciative of them. And they did seva to Prabhupada. And that will be to their eternal credit. So we can try to avoid having a Mayavadi idea of Mayavad. What do I mean by that is, Mayavadis say everything is one. We might get a Mayavadi idea of Mayavad by saying that all Mayavadis are one. No, all Mayavadis are not one. Everyone is an individual. And some of them may be aggressive proponents of Mayavad. For such people, Mayavad bhasha sunile haile sarvanash. We have to keep a long distance from them. But others might be just pious people who happen to go to that temple because that is in the vicinity or that has some nice ambience. Now, if they come to a Krishna temple, they like the ambience, they will come there also. So, the ambience here is better, they find better support facilities for their spirituality, and they may start coming here. So, is the prasad there contaminating? Is the kirtan there contaminating? Well, at one level, yes. But contamination, when does it happen and when does it not happen? So, because how something affects people's consciousness is quite difficult to say. That somebody might hear some Krishna kirtan done by some Mayavadi. But then, that person, okay, I want to know more Krishna kirtan. Where is this kirtan? And they might come to Hare Krishnas. And yena kena prakar manaha Krishna niveshayat. As one of the most prominent preachers in our movement, he told me that there's a popular Mayavadi in India. He is my Shiksha Guru. I said, what do you mean? He said that particular Mayavadi apparently said that India has been conquered by many people. So it's the Muslims conquered by Shakti. They use brute power. The British conquered by Yukti. They used trickery to conquer India. But he said, Hindus will conquer by Bhakti. So he said, I was very impressed by that. But he said, I went to their organization, I didn't see much Bhakti over there. But when I came to Hare Krishnas, I found there so much Bhakti. He says, so that statement inspired him to join the Hare Krishnas. So rather than like categorizing and permanently labeling people, yes, somebody might be going to Mayavadi organization. Somebody Mayavadi organization might also be spreading. But we need to see through it all, Krishna's plan is acting. And rather than simply labeling, yeah, this person is Mayavadi and going there is getting contaminated. Yeah, maybe. But maybe from their perspective, from a life of complete materialism, that person is opening up to some appreciation of spirituality. And who knows, that may help us come, that may be the impetus that opens their minds or hearts to bring them towards Krishna. So not all Mayavadis are equally aggressive in propagating that bhakti is for less intelligent. They may believe that, this small core of, but they don't propagate that to everyone. So, because they don't propagate that, okay, bhakti is nice, I want to practice bhakti. And I like bhakti over here. This is much better bhakti, let me come over here. So it's individual. So we see individually what is the consciousness of a particular person, then try to attract them toward Krishna. Thank you. Yes, please.
Thank you, Chaitanya Chimpro. Nice to see you here again. You're mentioning about, these Mayavadis and Brahman, you were just showing that. Now, if they think that Brahman is supreme and is the ultimate, how do they explain that it gets contaminated? And where do these, if Brahman is all one and that's the ultimate, where does the modes come in? So it's, in other words, are they saying there's something outside Brahman that's there? Maybe you can explain a little bit.
Yeah, it's difficult to explain. See, with respect to origins, every philosophy runs into problems. If you ask scientists or atheists, where did the Big Bang come from? How did the Big Bang explode? Or what did the singularity come from? They have difficulty in explaining that. If we consider the Advaitins, the Mayavadis, if Brahman is all that exists, where did Maya come from? How did Brahman come into Maya? They have difficulty explaining that. If you ask Vaishnavas, if people ask us, how did the Jiva fall from the spiritual world? We have difficulty explaining that. So origin is difficult for everyone to explain. But we could also say there are degrees of difficulty. if we understand the soul has free will, then there is a possibility that the free will can be misused. We could say it's a remote possibility, but it's possible. But with respect to Big Bang, matter coming from matter giving rise to consciousness, that hasn't happened in the time. How does it happen? Or if Brahman is the only reality, so how does that come under Maya? It's they find it difficult to explain. So they say that they use the, in our tradition, we use the word achintya. They use the word anirvachinya. Anirvachinya is that which is beyond words. So now, anirvachinya, they use it to just, like sometimes some speakers give answers which address the question. And some speakers give answers which stop the question. Don't ask anything more. You know, if somebody asks, say, you know, Krishna is very well known, but I never heard of Mahaprabhu. Is Mahaprabhu really God? I quote a verse from say, Padma Purana somewhere. Anybody who sees any difference between Krishna Chandra and Gaura Chandra is going to fall into hell and live there for an entire lifetime of Brahma. Okay. That's an answer that's not meant to address the question. That's an answer to stop the question. Don't ask anything more. Scaring people. So the anirvachinya is the category that they use. They say that it's all beyond words. So it's a difficult question for them to answer. I don't think there's any... Well, in general, origins are difficult to answer, but that is a lethal question for them.
I have another quick question. Is you're talking about the problems that are there happening in India as far as the Christians expressing all these philosophy. How are the devotees' response to this?
Well, it depends. At one level, although our movement is quite big in India, but still as compared to the huge population of India, we are not even 1% right now. So, we in that sense are not directly addressing that, but especially, this is happening in the rural areas, the tribal areas. So there are some devotees who are doing tribal outreach, and they're doing it quite well. So, in general, these tribals, although many of the tribal people, they understand that this is a part of our tradition. That they may not be directly worshipping Krishna, but Krishna, Durga, Kali, all these devatas are part of their tradition. And Christianity is some other tradition. So, if somebody from the same tradition comes in, and connects with them, teaches to them. Generally within the caste system, they were often disenfranchised, they were treated as untouchables or lower castes. So, but when devotees go and preach, our tribal outreach is happening phenomenally. And through that tribal outreach program, a lot of people who might be converted or who even were converted, they're coming back to bhakti. So that's one of the major initiatives that's happening. But in general, Prabhupada's solution was that we just have to do more preaching, more vigorously. One challenge with Christianity is that it's very commercialized. I had gone to an interfaith program and they had that if you convert to Christianity, you get, say, in India, 50,000 rupees or 1 lakh rupees, or you get free education in our convent school. Your child is sick, we will treat them. And then they have, now again, I'm not saying all Christians are like that, because even Christians are sattva guna, rajoguna, tamoguna. But there is one Christian, he said that we have a policy that if you can make 50 people into Christians, then that person will get a free trip to America. That's like a dream of Indians. I want to go to America. So they are not interested in going to Jesus Loka. They are going to America Loka. And that's why they are preaching.
Okay. Yes, but atheism is actually killing Christianity in the West, you know? I mean, just a comment. But my question is demigod worshipping covered Mayavadi, you would say, or, I mean, how it's different from Mayavadi?
Is the worship of the devatas covered Mayavad? Well, it depends. Chakravarti Padana's commentary talks about various ways in which the worship of devatas might be done. So, One is, it's quite elaborate, but I'll just quickly mention some of them. When somebody is doing worship of the devatas. So one could be that they are just symbols of Brahman. This, if somebody has this conception, then that is definitely Mayavad. That is at the one extent. The other is they are aids to Krishna. Like just after hearing the Bhagavad Gita, wherein Krishna tells Arjuna about Alpamedhasa, after that Krishna only tells Arjuna. Krishna and Arjuna both see that Bhadrakali is appearing in the sky. And Krishna tells Arjuna, get down and worship her. He says, worship her and seek to satisfy her. She will bless you with victory in this war. And Arjuna gets down and worship Bhadrakali. But he is seeing Bhadrakali not as an independent divinity. He is seeing that, yes, there is Krishna only has arranged the system of worship of the system of universal administration. And in that particular devata is in charge of particular things. So propitiating them for one's service to Krishna, that is okay. The gopis also did it, Katyayani, Arjuna did it several occasions. So that's what he says. This is something which we don't, this is something which is okay. Now in between that, there could be other conceptions. There could be something that they are an independent supreme divinity. Now this is not exactly Mayavad, but this is just the idea that even within the worship of the Hindus, they say worship, the way Hindus worship the deities, is it? Is it that they are saying Shiva alone is supreme and no one else is supreme? There are a few Shiva Bhaktas who do that. But most, so this particular conception is not very common. That this is the deity that is the supreme and only supreme. But there could be also something in between. This is our Kula Daivat. This is our family deity. This is what we have worshipped always throughout our life. And that's why we worship it. Now, is that deity supreme or not? Well, this is the deity that has blessed us. That's why we'll worship it. Now, in the Mahabharata, Drupada, who is fighting on the side of the Pandavas, Drupada's Kul Daivat was Shiva. And he would worship Lord Shiva and seek his blessings. In fact, he prayed to Lord Shiva, let my daughter have Arjuna as her groom. And that desire was fulfilled when Draupadi got Arjuna. So this kind of, it's just a family worship. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, yeah, if that's a part of your family or your community, you can worship that, you can participate in that, but your heart can be in the worship of the Lord. So it depends on what conception somebody is doing, the worship of the devatas. Okay. Thank you.
Hare Krishna. I'll try to be as quick and short as possible because it's kind of getting late. Maybe we can discuss this later. It's actually a very complicated issue. You know, when I first read the Bhagavatam back in the 70s, I think it was like 77 or so, coming back to the verse that you were, the verse for today, and also the purport by Srila Prabhupada, you know, I was a student at UC Berkeley, and I used to study film semiology, the language of film. And when I saw the painting of Vishnu looking at Durga with his glance, was impregnating Durga, I saw, oh my God, that's a film. That's exactly what the film is. And the first law of videos or film, the first law is that all films are illusion. And I realized that, wow, so this material world is like a film. It's actually an illusion. And so if you study, I guess we would take a long time to discuss this, but I'll just get to the point that you were mentioning in your lecture concerning empathy. There is a point in filmmaking, the best films that you can watch are the ones that make you actually totally hypnotized, because that was my thesis in college that I demonstrated, was that all films create a state of consciousness between hypnosis and dream. It's not hypnosis, it's not dream, it's in between, but it does. They do create hypnosis. How do they create hypnosis?
The best films that create that hypnosis, where you are totally enraptured by the Maya, by the illusion, are the ones where the filmmaker makes the character empathize, or the other way around, makes the audience empathize with the character. If there is no empathy, you will leave the movie theater. It's like, ah, this is a bad movie. It's a bad film. There is no empathy. So the question that I probably have for you here is that, and maybe we can discuss further in the next couple of days, don't you think that the devotees should try to empathize, that empathy that we empathize with Krishna, we empathize with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, with Lord Nityananda, find the deities in the altar that we can empathize with and become more like them, to be enraptured by them, so that we can become totally illusioned, so to speak. In other words, the more illusion that we have in Krishna, we will become more Krishna conscious. What do you think?
Yes, thank you. And empathy is very important in one sense. In fact, that is one of the reasons why the Bhagavatam, the Ramayana and Mahabharata, they focus the literature, the Ramayana and Mahabharata, they focus on their central characters are Kshatriyas, not Brahmanas. Because in one sense, for most people, to connect with Brahmanas is difficult. Somebody is constantly studying, immersing, memorizing verses. Kshatriyas, their life is exciting, they're fighting. There is romance, there is intrigue, there is conspiracy. Oh, this is interesting. So what the epics do is a very intelligent strategy. They focus on Kshatriyas. But within the life of the Kshatriyas, they show how much the Kshatriyas respect the Brahmanas, the sages. And that way, that respect for sages is also infused in the audience. So it is important that we connect with people, that we are able to connect with the scriptural characters. And same way with Srila Prabhupada, that when you read Srila Prabhupada's Lilamrita, Prabhupada's pastimes, Prabhupada is a pure devotee. But that does not mean Prabhupada, that we can't connect with Srila Prabhupada. When Prabhupada came alone to America, Prabhupada said, I didn't know whether to turn left or right. When we are in a difficult situation, we don't know what service to do. We might be just completely in ignorance. Now, Prabhupada is not in ignorance. Prabhupada has complete faith in Krishna. But even when Prabhupada has complete faith in Krishna, that does not necessarily mean that Krishna had made every step for Prabhupada clear. Okay, you will go here, you will meet this person, you will meet this person. Prabhupada himself says in the Markine Bhagavad Dharma, that Ache Kichu Karjatabe Ei Anumane. I guess you must have some purpose for me over here. Otherwise, why have you brought me over here? So, when we see Prabhupada's, the struggles that Prabhupada goes through, the challenges that Prabhupada's meet, we can empathize. So, sometimes if we might just only say Prabhupada is a pure devotee, then we may say that, okay, pure devotees face no problems. I have all my conditionings. Well, yeah, pure devotees may not have our conditionings, but pure devotees also face the same conditions that we face. They also face uncooperative people. Prabhupada said that. What is it? Prabhupada says, for my God brothers, I only got repression, compression, depression, something like that. You know, they didn't cooperate with me, basically, Prabhupada said. So that way, we need to empathize with the sacred characters in our tradition. And that is the only way we can actually become immersed in them. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Okay, one last and we will... Well, yeah. After that, okay. Siddhimani, your last is going to be very long. Should we talk?
This is short.
Yeah, please.
Because I'm a little bit more familiar with the evangelicals here. It's kind of in our wheelhouse out here.
Okay. But,
it sounds like there's a talking point that, that God, you know, somehow we're not interacting with God. But
that we are not, we means devotees.
The culture or whatever, I guess they're thinking it's all one. But, you know, we say Krishna's right there in the heart. He willfully holds the hand of the jiva as the jiva goes off on his bender in the conditional realm. You know, he's feeling it. He's feeling it. He's right there witnessing it. But maybe he doesn't get miserable about it, but he's feeling it. So So I'm wondering, is our problem with these Christians that we're not miserable enough to feel it?
Is it that we are not miserable enough? Well, they also say that, and actually you are miserable because you are not worshipping God. Because the version of Christianity that goes on, that spreads in India is mostly karmakandi. That our prosperity is the proof of our piety. And your poverty is the proof of your impiety. That your gods are false. And that's why they are leaving you in such misery. Our gods are true, and that's why they're leading us to prosperity. So different people use different strategies, and I don't want to criticize Christianity per se, because as I said, there are sattvic Christians also. And in some ways, some of them are motivated by, they just feel these people are poor and suffering and you want to help them. But some are, it's just a power game. It's a game for wealth and power and votes. So then it becomes very utilitarian. There is this whole faith healing kind of thing, where it's not faith healing, it's just cunning, it's just manipulation. So they will give sugar pills to the patients who are some tribal people who are just sick, and they will tell them that, you know, this child is very sick, there's not much chance of surviving, but still we'll give this medicine and you pray to your God. And then they give sugar pills, and then the child's health worsens. They say, you know, child is going to die now. You know, you pray to your God. Would you like to pray to our God? Let's try once again. And then they pray to Jesus. At that time, they give real medicine. They say, our God healed you. It is God who has given you a new life now for your child. Because God has given you life, now you should give your life to God. And that's how they convert. So that is very manipulative. It's unfortunate. They do sometimes like that. Now there are some attempts to try to counter that also. So, it's just like Yukta Vairagya. Their version of Yukta Vairagya is whatever misconception they find that they can use to attack us, they will attack the broad Indian tradition. Okay. So thank you very much. Sri Chaitanya Charita Amrit ki. Shri Prabhupad ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki, Gaur Premanande.